Hello and welcome to another Texans Talk podcast. I'm your host of the day, Anthony Wood, and with me today is Houston Texans receiver Vincent Smith. Vincent, thank you very much for joining me. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on today.
No, thank you very much, and congratulations for your birthday over the weekend. How was it?
Thank you. It was good. Had a good time here in Houston. Stay local. Low-key, but I had a great birthday.
Sometimes the low-key ones are the best. So first of all, how would you rate your rookie season in the NFL?
Ooh, that's a hard one. I was thinking about that. I always like to look at my ups and downs, but overall it was a great learning experience. Like I said, it's hard to rate myself.
Yes.
I mean, if I'm being honest, I made a couple of plays just under 100 yards, one touchdown for the season, where there's other rookie receivers like Kiki who's done much more, but my expectations, I like to rate pretty high the first season.
Was there ever an element of sort of feeling starstruck when you joined then, and how long did that take to pass if it happened?
Yeah, I felt starstruck the day I walked in the building. Walking in, you see DeAndre and Deshaun and JJ, Jadeveon, and me being from South Carolina. A lot of these guys, they're like legends in the Carolinas, so it's big and cool, seeing other guys you nearly talk about every day about on the football field. But being starstruck, it kind of goes away, but you still man, I still play with some of the greatest in the game right now.
Yeah, there must be days where you're sort of, are you sort of pinching yourself every now and then going, this is actually happening?
Yes, sometimes I'll be chilling around like, I'm really an NFL player. This is what an NFL player does.
So did it live up to your expectations when you joined the Texans?
Yes, sir, definitely. It's a great organization. I mean, I've learned a lot over the past year, and I think the future is bright.
Absolutely. And were the Texans a team that you got to speak to much before the draft?
Excuse me, say that one time.
Were the Texans a team that you got to spend a great deal of time with before the draft? Did you speak to them?
Yes, they're one of few teams that invited me on a visit to come check out the facilities and the city a little bit and get my pre-draft visit done, them and the Jets, and I felt really good here, felt at home. I met a couple of people I really liked, and I thought if I had a decision, this would be a place I would choose.
Yeah, what was your first thought when you sort of first walked into the facilities there?
It's like, wow, I'm really here. getting ready to strap up against some pros. It's humid, it's hot.
It definitely is. The Texas heat, I mean, it takes some getting used to. So how hard was it adjusting to the NFL, let alone the heat?
The NFL is a big learning curve, coming from the D2 school, things are far different from each other, but it's just a learning curve. You got to adjust and kind of grow and learn as you become a professional.
So
the speed of the game's a little bit faster.
But yeah,
you can adjust to that. But getting adjusted to Houston wasn't too bad for me. I like it out here, and where I come from, it's not too much of different weather. It's just the humidity out here is a little bit worse. But
yeah, you must be glad they've installed that huge cool box thing at the training ground down in Houston.
Yes, sir. Yeah, definitely.
So looking ahead at this season, how much more comfortable are you feeling now that you've got a whole year under your belt?
It's like a whole 180 turnaround from last season. I know what's going on. I know the plays. I know it's kind of like college where I knew how I was going to run a route and how I was going to win. And if I make a mistake, I know where to fix my mistake. And that's kind of where I'm at this year. So I feel like I got a whole grasp on everything going on. Offensive-wise and special teams, I'm kind of understanding more and all technique and being a professional.
Absolutely. And now that you've had a year in this system, do you find that running routes in particular is more impulsive than it was as a rookie?
Yeah. Last year was all thinking, you get up to the line of scrimmage, you're still thinking about the play instead of thinking about what's in front of me, how I'm going to get open, what the defense is doing. And now it's like, okay, I see what they're doing. I know the play. I only have to think about it. I know how to run this route and win.
Certainly. And what's it like being part of such a talented receiving core? I mean, DeAndre, Kiki, Will, Well, what's it like being part of a group like that?
It's a blessing. I got a lot of guys to learn from. As I like to learn from everybody. You talk to Will, he gives you his tips and what he thinks and what he sees on the routes. Talk to DeAndre, you get a different thing from him. Even talking to Kiki, he sees things very well. He's one of the better slots in the game, and I can't wait to see what he does this year.
I think every single Texans fan would agree with you there. We're very excited to see what Kiki has to do, as well as yourself, of course. So, what's it like being coached? I mean, you mentioned learning from players around you. What's it like being coached by Andre Johnson?
You sit back and listen to everything he says. The man's a Hall of Famer. I mean, you can't take anything he says for granted, because he's done it for a long time, and he did it for a long time very well. And he's one of the guys, when I was a kid watching and just seeing him dominate the game, so now to be able to get tips from him and him, take his time to critique us, I take that to heart.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, last season as well, you also had Wes Welker on the team. I mean, what was he like to spend time with every day? Was he how helpful was he, especially in your rookie development?
Definitely helpful. He's again one of the guys who played, so it's different hearing stuff from guys who played and guys, who kind of coach the game. So listening to Wes, you just get that, everything, we learn isn't that simple. It just sometimes takes a player to be like, yeah, that's how it's taught and that's how you learn it, but sometimes you just got to do it this way. That's kind of one of the things I learned. Everything is, sometimes you got to freestyle it a little bit and learn what works best for you.
So, what have you aimed to improve on this season in particular? What sort of specific goals did you have for 2019?
To be more consistent, be a little bit heavier this year, be on all the special teams I can be on and be very good at it, compete and win. Like I said, I think being consistent for me is a big goal, because I feel like being consistent makes yourself very reliable and your teammates can trust you.
Certainly. And how exciting is it for you now that you've had a year, as I mentioned before, a year under your belt, going into it knowing that you might well have a bigger responsibility on this team this year, especially playing alongside someone like Deshaun Watson? How exciting is that for you?
It's very exciting because, I mean, it's, coming from a year ago where I'm just trying to make the roster. Now I know what I need to do to make a roster. I know where my roles can lead me. Just playing football, I love the game of football, so just playing football is exciting. But being able to do it at the highest level, at a high level, that's what excites me. I'm just ready to compete, play, and contribute to a winning team.
I'm sure it's got to help doing a job that you absolutely love. I can certainly believe that. So I like to close out by throwing my guests off just a little bit. So first of all, have you got any specific special touchdown celebrations planned for 2019? Because I know Justin Reed mentioned that he was thinking of planning something special.
Me, nah, I don't dance too well. I think everything is gonna be real simple. You might get a, I don't know, maybe if I score a really big touchdown, I might hit a backflip. I don't know.
I think it's safe to say we're all looking forward to that. And finally, you're headed to London this year to play the Jaguars. I know Texans fan base there is particularly eager to finally see their team at Wembley. How excited are you to play over the pond, and how much do you know about the history of Wembley, for example?
The history of Wembley, I little, but I'm excited to go overseas and play in front of a whole new crowd and fan base, to see how fans over there react and interact with us. That'll be very fun, and just learn a little bit more history about England, and being in England's gonna be really cool for me.
Well, I know the fan base there very well, and I can tell you they are extremely excited, and it's going to be quite an atmosphere there. Vincent, thank you very much for joining me today. Where can our listeners find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at Vincent Smith and on Instagram.
Thank you very much for joining us, Vincent. We really appreciate your time. Now we bring in Mark Sessler, writer for NFL.com and co-host of the Around the NFL podcast. Mark, thank you very much for stopping by today. How are you?
I'm doing good. I don't know how to follow in Vincent's shoes, but I'm gonna do my best for you here.
I'm sure you're doing an absolutely fantastic job. So let's open up with the biggest talking point of the day, of course, the GM situation down in Houston. First of all, what's your opinion of the decision to cut ties with Brian Gain?
I mean, it kind of threw me off when I first saw it. Like, I think it probably threw a lot of people off. And I was out in the middle of Los Angeles, checked my phone, and it's like it's early June, and they've just fired Brian Gain, who's been there for, you know, a year and a half. Totally bizarre. But then the connecting points start to come together, and I think that, you know, the dam opened this morning when Albert Breer put out his MMQB piece that really explained that this was not based around one necessarily aspect of Brian Gain, but the presence, I think, of Jack Easterby from New England, who was their culture coach and someone that would file emails, detailed emails to Bill Belichick on the reg about, you know, every aspect of the organization, and was very well liked and trusted there, and a big important, you know, the Patriots love their behind the scenes guys that are very mysterious. He seemed like one of that type. Houston pulled him away. He's done a lot of work in the offseason to look at that organization from top to bottom, and that's paired well with Cal McNair, who's taken over day-to-day responsibilities as owner. And I think it was a global look at the organization and deciding what and who would fit best with Bill O'Brien and what kind of power structure. And it sounds like Easterby is someone who's going to have a very powerful role, who will, you know, essentially be someone who Bill O'Brien and the GM to be named would answer to, and who would solve maybe disputes or team debates in that sense as well. And I think Cal McNair would have a big part of that. And so you're looking at an organization trying to really operate in unison after a lot of stops and starts there. And to me, it's Nick Caserio obviously is the guy they want, and they've interviewed a number of other people very quickly, which tells me, as they zero in on Caserio, that this is the dude, because he's fit in so well with Bill O'Brien in the past, very tight. I think it's someone that can work with the whole trio fits. And in the NFL, if you find that kind of a structure, that can lead to success. You can't have a hiccup in that situation, because bad teams do that all the time. And so the timing was jarring. And I'm sure it's not what Brian Gain signed up for, but this happens in the league, because it's sort of friends hiring and wanting to work with friends to some degree.
That is definitely how it comes across at this point in time. We know that Nick Caserio and Bill O'Brien are friends, so it's an interesting situation here. So moving forward, we know they've interviewed Ray Farm already. They've interviewed Martin Mayhew as well. But as you mentioned, everyone is expecting them to try and get hold of Nick Caserio. Do you think that these are the three targets to look at, or do you think maybe they will be looking at other potential names as well?
I think you could throw someone like Scott Pioli in there potentially as someone that, you know, is well-versed with all the characters involved here. But it just feels to me like one of those searches where, you know, they are zooming through a Rooney Rule scenario. Not that that's why they hired them, or you got to see how quickly they kind of mow through these interviews. And I think that the target, and one of the reasons you let someone go, is if you have a strong feeling that you can pull someone in that would be sort of a dream hire. And I don't think you do all of this to come out of it with Ray Farmer, who, you know, was learning on the job and probably hired a little early in Cleveland and encountered a structure of his own in Cleveland that was very poorly formed. And one of the reasons he struggled there was because of structure. And so you've got to bring the right guy in. And it just seems to me that all signs point to Nick is our guy, and we're going to do everything we can to make it work. And that boils down to, you know, the Patriots can't really stop that kind of a hire if the job description is clearly, clearly higher than what he has in New England. And that would be the case. And they can try to keep him around the same way they kept Josh McDaniels around. That's why you don't want it to take too long, because the more, with every passing day, Patriots ownership will do what they can to keep their guy around. He's been a huge asset in New England for a long time in the shadows.
Well, that's obviously going to be the big concern for Houston going forward. Like you mentioned, is the Patriots have a habit of keeping hold of guys like this, like they did safe with Josh McDaniels. So if they're not able to get hold of Caserio, can you see the Texans possibly panicking and thinking, this is not what we signed up for, this is not gone to plan at all, what do we do?
I don't feel like they're in panic mode, just because the more you learn about what Jack Easterby's role was and what it's going to be in Houston potentially, I think it's going to be very powerful, and I don't think it's a panic situation. You know, you don't want to go hire the wrong guy, and if they really had no candidate they loved, you wonder if that's a role that Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby could fill themselves to some degree for a bit until they really, you know, zero in on someone. You're right, though, because you're dealing with New England, and they've shown that at the 11th hour they can change people's minds inside their own building. So, you know, and Nick Caserio also has been out for a few jobs and gotten close and turned down jobs. So, you know, he's very valued by the Patriots, and they're not going to just let him roll out of there for a song. I think there's going to be a long discussion about that.
Certainly, and once there is a new GM in place, whether it's Caserio or anyone else, it's going to be a very interesting situation down in Houston, because all of a sudden conversations are going to be kicked up again about, say, Jadeveon Clowney and his contract situation, and are they going to look at possibly trading in players, that sort of thing. So how do you think, first of all, how do you think a new GM might handle the situation with Clowney? Is it going to be any different from Brian Gain, or do you think he'll continue to try and cut down on his target sort of finances?
Well, I mean, you get the sense that maybe Brian Gain wasn't quite as active in some ways as they would want, as some other GMs seem to be, and certainly as the office in New England operates, they'll constantly make trades left and right and move up and down the draft board as they please. And that hasn't really been, or wasn't, under the very quick reign of Brian Gain, a staple of theirs. I don't know if things would vastly change, though, because I think you'd still have Bill O'Brien in place. And listening to what Bill O'Brien sort of said about Jadeveon Clowney, it's sort of like, we're not going to pander to the players' financial needs. It sounds like they stay very far apart right at this time about where they are on their contract. You know, ESPN put out a report at one point that they would be potentially willing to shop Jadeveon Clowney. And I think there's, when you think about giving out a massive long-term deal, his durability obviously is part of that discussion. And I'm not sure that they're sold on just waiting to clear cap room to pay him a huge chunk of change, because if that's the case, these deals tend to sort of happen when both sides feel good about the idea of that much sooner. They don't linger into training camp and become sort of a nettlesome situation, which this one's looking to be. So I don't know if someone's going to swoop in and save the day on that front, because I think some of the main financial issues behind that and how they view the player really wouldn't change too much.
How much do you think the decision not to pay Clowney the sum that he wants is down to the fact that the Texans in the next couple of years are going to have to extend Deshaun Watson, they're going to have to extend Will Fuller, possibly DeAndre Hopkins, possibly J.J. Watt? How much do you think that's got to do with it as well?
I don't think it's a non-factor, but the cap also, and this is good for football fans, because we really, if fans don't want to have to worry about how much money an owner spends to put a good team on the field. You want to feel like any team could do that. You want to keep your young players. And the cap has risen, you know, to such a degree season on season where most teams don't really have a cap issue. They've got to pay these guys, but they find a way around it. So you'd like to think that you don't have to, if you have three or four star players, just simply wave goodbye to one. I think obviously Clowney is viewed as a dominant player in certain elements of his game. He's someone you'd absolutely want in your defense. You'd want him around long term. But if his asking price, and you know, there's conversations happening behind the scenes with the club and the agent, if it's just something that they're not willing to part with, then that's the kind of thing where you move on. And again, if you look at the Patriots, where Bill O'Brien, you know, spent a lot of time, and if you look at where Nick Caserio's come from, they never would be held hostage by a player's demands. They did this with Richard Seymour at times. They did it, you know, with other players. I can think of Jamie Collins, who they traded to Cleveland because all he was talking about was a contract. I just don't think that the way that good teams operate is to fold the tent for a player's demands. And is he their highest priority, if that's your question, above a quarterback? No, he's not. But I do think the cap would allow for them to handle this in a way where if their Super Bowl window looks open and it's in that world right now, you got to find a way to pay everyone you can who will get you there.
Definitely. And talking about bringing in players that can get you there, I mean, do you think the Texans could possibly now, with Gain out the building, do you think they may be looking at, say, Duke Johnson, Trent Williams, or Patrick Peterson? Because all of them seem, at least, to be available via trade one way or another.
I mean, I'd want to, if it's a factor of Gain not being there, I'd want to know more about, because there hasn't been a lot about, this is the problem with Brian Gain. I think this is more of a global decision in a fit. So I don't know if Brian Gaines' MO was I'm not going to trade for anyone or I don't like to wheel and deal versus, you know, they didn't have a full suite of draft picks during his entire time there too. And he maybe didn't have the flexibility when it comes to trading for someone. You know, a lot of these trades happen earlier on in the off season. I already moving into and past minicamp. I could see someone, because some of the names that are out there, like a Patrick Peterson, potentially. I think the Cardinals kind of have their house in order a little bit more, and they've got to figure out what they want to do with him, but he would be very expensive. So is that what they want to invest future draft picks on? He's a great cornerback. Like, that would be, help them. I think a guy like Duke Johnson, who is clearly on the block, and they've had the Browns. When you hear Duke Johnson say, I want to be traded, it's because they've been trying to trade him all offseason, and he knows that. And they haven't really found someone to move him for at the right price. That's how I read that one, that they've been very willing to move on from him. They still need him, though, the Browns, potentially, until Kareem Hunt gets back, along with Nick Chubb. So they're not, like, itching to move him for nothing. So they're going to want something back in return. And does that fit for the Texans? It really is comes down to, like, what really the player and the cost have to match. And there aren't a lot of tradable players at the moment that you can look at. I think the one you could potentially, Trent Williams in Washington, that situation is another thorny deal where that would fit an immediate need in Houston to have a what I would consider arguably the best left tackle in football join the team, you know, after they lost Dwayne Brown a few years ago.
Certainly, and it would, like you said, I mean, it would be an instant upgrade on that offensive line, and it would make that offense in general, and Deshaun Watts in particular, look that much more dangerous heading into this season. So I think one of the key players, for me at least, that's you're going to have to look out for this preseason is going to be Lamar Miller and Deontay Foreman as well, because I think their performances will then decide whether or not the Texans do end up chasing after someone like Duke Johnson. But one thing I found particularly interesting was that Brian Gain always stressed the importance that he wanted to build through the draft, and I'm curious as to whether or not that attitude within the team will change when a new GM comes in. What do you think?
Well, let's just play a game presuming that it's Nick Caserio. Then I would say that the model, because you then have a full stack deck of expatriate thinking people in a division with a ton of Patriots personnel and ex-coaches in there too, which is interesting. But the Texans, to me, would be a team that I think would probably take on the mold of wanting to add players, veterans through trades the way that New England does. Now, here's the thing. New England has Bill Belichick and Bill Belichick's staff to coach up certain players in an environment where veterans who would go elsewhere and totally, I think, fade, find a final spark in New England, and they find a way to turn, you know, nobodies into Pro Bowl tackles, and you know, there's just a bit of magic happening with the Patriots for a long time. Can Houston simply duplicate it because they have Bill O'Brien and Nick Caserio? I don't know, but I think the approach to team building would be one where you don't want massive, lavish contracts. That's not the New England way. You get veterans at the right time in their career, and you aren't afraid to move on from them when other teams would try to keep them around because of the maybe year or two left on what a contract would not look so good in the second or third year. I think you want to find guys that fit the team and fit really well, and they don't cost you a ton of money. And so I again, it's just like, you look at New England's roster, there aren't a ton of like big giant contracts. They just don't do that. If you don't want to fit what New England's doing, you go down and you play for the Dolphins, and then suddenly everyone forgets who you are. So it's like, can Houston become that kind of a team? That's the question. They're not quite there yet, but they're among the top third in the league in terms of how they do things.
Certainly, and if we stick on the trade of the talk of Clowney and trades and such, how much do you think, obviously we mentioned that perhaps the Texans saw an opportunity here to bring in Caserio, and that was why they perhaps dropped Gain, but how much do you think also his lack of spending and moving in free agency had to do with the decision to cut ties with him?
It might. His tenure there is a little hazy to me because you don't get a real sense of him being the most powerful voice in the building. I think that Bill O'Brien has to be, if you do a power ranking of powerful coaches, I mean, Bill O'Brien has sort of been through a number of organizational changes, and he's been the beeline. And when there's an organizational shift in terms of ownership, sometimes a new owner comes in and clears house and says, absolutely not, we're just going to start over. You saw that in Cleveland. You've seen that many times, and it happens with other teams too. But Bill O'Brien has remained through all of these changes, and I think he absolutely has the confidence of ownership. And so I'm really not sure what Brian Gaines' stamp was on the team in terms of how aggressive they were or not. It's hard to sort of read that. But whatever it was, the experience was not enough for them to think this is what we want to keep doing. And I think that Bill O'Brien is probably, you know, you can like this in a coach. He's a headstrong dude who has to be held accountable for some of the issues with the Texans, no doubt, because I think he's part of their decision-making process. But at the same time, I mean, he's the one that I think he's a very good coach that they said, through all the ups and downs, he's been the beeline through it. And I think they're going to try to find a GM to pair with him that will have a powerful voice too. But it's hard to know from the outside how much Brian Gaines really had a chance to do. You might need a year. I mean, if it's like any normal job, it's about a year in when you start to feel comfortable and you start to get your sea legs. And he was cut out of there before that had a chance to happen.
Yeah, he never really got past that rookie stage. And you've got to feel a bit bad for him, I must admit, because I don't think, it's especially considering his lack of top-end draft picks last year, I don't think he did a bad job at all bringing in Keke Coutee and Justin Reed. So I'm sure he will get picked up by another team relatively quickly if he decides to put himself back out there so quickly. But one of the possible ramifications of all of this that I don't think a lot of people are taking into consideration is what sort of impact is this going to have on the rookies that he did bring in this year? Because I know Matt Hammond, he made a very good point earlier by saying that the decision was so to bring you in was so egregious that we decided to fire our GM. Do you think that's going to be in the back of, say, Titus Howard or Max Sharping's heads?
Well, specifically with Titus Howard, it sounds like the coaching staff was very much on board with that pick, that he's not an outlier, that suddenly he's got to win over a bunch of coaches that wanted someone else. I mean, he fills a need, and he's someone that sounds like they came to consensus. It's not that often that a rookie or a first or second year GM would be making picks that no one else has any buy into. It's not that that would be unusual. And I feel that the Texans probably are cool with Howard number one. But in general, as a player, the code word you hear from them all the time is it's above my pay grade. Like, I can't worry. It's a business. They're there. They have no choice. Most, they've signed contracts. They're there for 4 years. It's like, you can't worry about that. If you go and play well, people will warm up to you real quick. And the mentality of most of these athletes is not to really worry about the shifting drama in front offices, because it happens in every organization. People come and go. And the player has to think about the player first, the player's conditioning, their body, how they fit in with the team. And just beginning their career, it's too much to take on to worry about what Brian Gaines, you know, I think presence or disappearance means for them. That would be my guess. I think most athletes that I've talked to just are very strong-willed and strong of mind, and I don't think they would allow this to affect them too much.
Certainly, and something I think is going to be on a lot of people's minds now, especially O'Brien's, you'd have to admit, is what's his job security like at this point in time? I mean, do you think that this could be seen as his last chance from Cal McNair? I mean, it seems that Cal McNair is the kind of owner who is more willing to make cuts if he feels it's right and is not necessarily going to give him the time that his father perhaps would have. Do you think this is a last chance for O'Brien, given that this will be his third GM?
I really don't, because it seems like they're almost doubling down on the Bill O'Brien experience by surrounding him, or wanting to, with, you know, people he has a track record of getting along with. And if they bring in Nick Caserio, it feels to me more like new life for Bill O'Brien. I mean, any coach outside of maybe one or two could be in hot water with, you know, a string of very bad seasons. But Bill O'Brien to exist through that entire ugly stretch of time when Ryan Mallett and Brian Hoyer and fill in the blank were playing quarterback, now he's got his quarterback. And I think that he's shown, Bill O'Brien to me, that he can coach an offense, that he can run the show, that team is a contender, and that he knows how to maximize Deshaun Watson. It's all good things. That's what you want in your coach. And I think he's a strong-minded dude. And, like, I don't see it. I think I see him as a very powerful coach, one of the more powerful coaches in the league, who from the outside seems like he has buy-in from ownership. He's been through a lot of changes with them. He's not just caused them all. He's been and rode through a lot of ups and downs with them. And, you know, some of the better teams, what they do is, if you do find a good coach, you stick with that guy. You don't just change and churn the whole staff every 3 or 4 years. Things don't go your way. And it feels like with O'Brien, it's that latter situation that's unfolding right now.
It almost sounds like you're not too keen on Ryan Mallett and Brian Hoyer. Am I wrong there?
Well, you know, I as a Browns fan, you know, I really liked Brian Hoyer for one season in Cleveland until that melted down. And I remember a time when I really wanted them to trade for Ryan Mallett because he was the next big thing. But that one spell when they were both on the Texans, you realize all these myths have been completely unpacked as false. Like they're backup quarterbacks or they're not in the league.
I'm so
not a huge fan.
No, I'm so glad that 2015 preseason training camp was on Hard Knocks, because getting a look in at that quarterback room, especially when Ryan Mallett was going through all of those problems, and it was so entertaining, I have to admit.
What a gem, right? What television that was.
So a new GM, a new offensive coordinator, a new QB coach, and widely new offensive line and secondary. Do you think all of these changes are going to pay off in 2019, or do you think perhaps it's too much too soon?
Well, I think when you look at the coordinator, it's Tim Kelly, and he was with O'Brien and Penn State. He's been with the Texans. So it's not I'd be more concerned if you're bringing in someone who's clashing with the head coach and wanting to run a completely different offense. It's going to be essentially the same exact offense with someone who knows the drill, knows Bill O'Brien. So just again, it's another internal fit that Bill O'Brien really loves Tim Kelly. And when it comes to the other changes, I mean, this, if you look around the league, there's a lot of stuff like this happening. I mean, you want your coaches, if they're being promoted, to move on to go elsewhere. It looks good for you and your coaching tree, but I don't think it's too many changes. No, I think that it starts with the head coach, and it's his job to, by the time you get to training camp, the staff's been together. You know, we're all not thinking about football at times in the off season, but these guys, especially like in February or March, are just bunkered in. And by the time, and you see this on Hard Knocks, they're doing their meetings in August. They've spent hundreds of hours together. So it's not like, oh, let's get to training camp and just reshuffle the deck and see how it lands. Like, they have a pretty good sense of who they are. And a lot of these guys have known each other for years and years, even if they haven't been on the same team.
Actually, while we're on the topic of Hard Knocks, I've got to ask, which team do you most want to see this year?
For me, because it's a pretty short list of teams that simply have to say yes if it's put upon them, the Raiders. Because
absolutely.
You've got literally every element. There's no, I mean, I think the Lions are a choice. I don't really need to see 5 hours of the Detroit Lions on HBO. The Raiders work beautifully. I mean, it's got a team, you know, with its back up against the wall. I think John Gruden, every time I've been to an event where Gruden at, it just seems a little annoyed and pissed off, and I get it because the shine came off last season. You know, you've got the whole thing going on there. Mike Mayock would be great on television. You got Antonio Brown. You've got Derek Carr trying to come back from the depths. So that's good television. There's just a lot of interesting, dramatic storylines. And I think we'd learn a lot about how Gruden and Mayock work together, and that, to me, would be fascinating to watch.
I couldn't agree more, and especially when you sort of throw on top Vontez Perfect and Richie Incognito as well. I mean, what a recipe.
Right.
So I'd like to throw my guests off as I close out somewhat. So first of all, if you could pick any former NFL cornerback at their prime to improve this Texans lineup, who would they be and why? And I'm going to go ahead and rule out Dion, because I think he would obviously be the top of everyone's list.
You know, the name that comes to mind, and he's recently retired, but when he was at the height of his powers, I don't know if I've seen a more dominant shutdown press cornerback than Darrell Revis. Can you imagine him on the Houston Texans at a young 23-year-old version of him? I mean, that would set him off on defense.
That would be absolutely amazing. I think every Texans fan out there can agree. If we can somewhere find just a nice little Revis Island, I think we would. I think we'd be pleased with that. And then
a little time machine.
Yeah, exactly. And then finally, if you could bring in any former NFL GM to fix the situation in Houston, who would it be? And for me, I'm going to go ahead and throw Ernie Accorsi in the mix.
Oh, I love Ernie Accorsi, an old Browns GM, by the way. you know, I don't know if you can consider him former, because he is just recently left the league. But who would fit in better with Bill O'Brien and that Patriots-oriented group of people than the first personnel guy that Bill Belichick groomed to become a GM than Ozzie Newsome? I think that happened way back in Cleveland, you've seen that special Cleveland 95.
Yeah.
If you could have a young Ozzie Newsome come in and stick stick it out with them for the next 20 years, you know you're in good hands.
That would be amazing. That's a fantastic call, I must admit. I can't believe I didn't even think of Ozzie Newsome there. He would be fantastic. I mean, imagine the talent he would be able to find.
So I think he's still technically on the Ravens payroll as some sort of a consultant. So, you know, let's ignore that if that's still the case. But otherwise, yes.
Well, thank you very much for joining me. It's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you today. Where can our listeners find you on social media?
I'm on Twitter at Mark, M-A-R-C, Sessler, S-E-S-S-L-E-R, N-F-L. And on Instagram, same name. And we have our podcast three times a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. We're going to shift into Tuesday and Thursday, the Around the NFL podcast, Tuesday, Thursday, just through this sort of dark period up until training camp. But then it's three times a week with a Twitter show as well, all season long. And you can just punch in Around the NFL podcast and you'd find a way to hear us at some point. It wouldn't be too hard to search it out.
We'll make sure to keep up to date with everything from Around the NFL. And I must admit, for a dark period, it's been surprisingly entertaining this past week.
For you guys, absolutely. It's kind of interesting when this happens in the middle of June, so I don't disagree.
Well, thank you very much once again. I've been your host, Anthony Wood. Please follow me on Twitter at ARWoodNFL. And, of course, keep up to date with everything Texans at the Texans War Reviewer USA Today.